A big job number rocks the markets. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Employment numbers out Friday show a gain of 235,000 American jobs. That is better than forecasters predicted. The unemployment rate is a hair lower at 4.7%. Investors expect the Fed to raise rates next week, and this strong report doesn't change that. Let's put all these numbers in context with Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Mark.
So strong numbers. What do you think this means big picture?
It's confirmation that the economy is on a better footing in the first quarter. We actually had back-to-back solid increases in January and February after an unusually weak period of hiring in the fourth quarter. It's not runaway growth, though, and I think it's important to bear that in mind. It's consistent with that Fed vision of sort of modest tightening to keep the economy on an even keel.
And we're waiting on a Fed decision next week. How do you think they're viewing this report?
Well, even before this report, they sent some pretty strong signals. They're ready to raise rates again in March. But I think the important thing is that there's nothing in the report that suggests they'll have to increase the tempo of tightening after the March meeting.
So we like job growth. We also like wage growth, which hasn't come around as quickly as a lot of people would like. What do you see in this report in terms of what people are actually getting in their pocket?
The rate of wages did pick up a little bit. It was 2.6% last month. That's on a year-on-year basis. It accelerated to 2.8% with inflation running at about 2%. That 2.8% gain means there's almost a 1% real increase going into people's pockets. We haven't seen real wage increases in a very long time. So that's good news. Even better news, the Fed can live with 2.8%. That's the kind of wage inflation that's well within the safe zone in terms of price inflation. So again, consistent with their vision of sustained growth going forward.
This is the first jobs report under the Trump administration, or at least fully under the Trump administration. Do you see any signs here that some of these job gains are driven by expectations of future policy, or is it too early to think that way?
It's possible. There really was a 28,000 gain in manufacturing, 9,000 in mining, which includes oil and gas. Those are big numbers for those sectors. I think if you continue to see gains like that over the next few months, then maybe we can attribute it to Trump. At the moment, I think it's a little early for that.
Okay, Christopher Lowe, thanks as always.
Thank you, Mark.
More Americans are working freelance, so co-working spaces are exploding in popularity. They offer people a chance to rent a desk or an office. It's a good deal for self-employed folks who don't want to work from home. The thing about some of these spaces, though, is that they are total dude fests. Now there's a new movement catering to women who are rethinking what a modern inclusive workspace can be. Erica Barris takes us inside the growing business of co-working spaces designed for women.
Priya Amin spent nearly a decade working as a brand manager for big corporations. Then she had a baby.
There was a lack of flexibility, so I became a stay-at-home mom.
She switched gears, and while she took care of her kids, started working as a consultant. Now she's launching a startup. And for $150 a month, she works here, the Whetstone, a co-working space just outside Pittsburgh. That monthly fee covers a desk, Wi-Fi, coffee, and for an additional amount, childcare. So its members are mostly women, and they are mostly moms.
There's a lot of guilt associated with moms working, especially when you've got young children. And here, I think everybody echoes that idea that you can do both.
The Whetstone doesn't bill itself as a female-only co-working space, but essentially it is. And more co-working spaces are opening up all over the country that market themselves to women. Audrey Gelman opened The Wing last year, a female-only space and social club in New York City. 600 women are members, and about 100 are there on any given day. While there are some private rooms, it isn't the kind of office where you can really go in and close the door. People work at communal tables.
And something we hear a lot from the women at The Wing is that they're more productive, you know, they feel less self-conscious and more free to sort of just plow through whatever they have in front of them.
Gelman came up with the idea after working at places she felt were too male-dominated.
I started to refer to them as bro working.
She says the decor was dark and kind of techie, and
there were, you know, pumps for beer, but not for breast milk.
The wing, it's the opposite. Decorated in pastels, it has a lactation room for breastfeeding moms and a feminist library. In Pittsburgh, I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
And finally, America is hitting a big milestone, one that says a lot about how the way we eat and drink is changing. Drinks industry tracker Beverage Marketing Corp says for the first time, bottled water overtook soda as the number one drink in the U.S. by sales volume last year. This is big, and a whole industry has been anticipating this for a long time. America's move away from sugary drinks is having massive business impact on soda companies, distributors, grocery stores, and restaurants. Other beverage industry stats say the milestone may actually happen this year, but anyway, you slice the numbers, the sugary soda reign is ending, and the business world is dealing with that reality. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.